अपरयम इतस्पंजम प्रकृतिं गरिमे परम जीवभूतं महाभाहो यगेदं धारयते जगत। Besides this inferior nature, O mighty armed Arjuna, there is a superior energy of mind, which are all living entities who are struggling with material nature and are sustaining the universe. Etad yoni nibhutani sarvanityu padharaya aham krishnasya jagataha prabhava pralayastatha. Of all that is material and all that is spiritual in this world, know for certain that I am both its origin and dissolution. Matta parataram nanyat kinchinasti dhananjaya mai sarvamidam protam sutre manigana iva. O conqueror of wealth, Arjuna, there is no truth superior to me. Everything rests upon me as pearls are strung on a thread. We are reading this evening from the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, which is entitled Knowledge of the Absolute. In this chapter, Lord Sri Krishna has explained the constituents of material energy. He is explaining that He is the one supreme source of everything that exists. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matta sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samandata. That of all spiritual and material worlds, everything is emanating from me. The wise who know this perfectly engage in my loving service and worship me with all their hearts. Krishna explains that this material energy is endlessly mutable. Dukalayam ashashvatam. Therefore, essentially, the real pleasure, the real joy that every soul is seeking can never be found in this world. Because the pleasures that are derived between the senses and their objects are temporary. Yehi samsparashaja bhoga dhuka jona evate atyantavanta kontaya nate sudamate buddha. That an intelligent person knows that all material pleasures have a beginning and an end. And ultimately, when they end, they create a miserable situation. Frustration, sorrow, great loss. This world is full of so many complications. And the more we try to be happy in this world, the more we become implicated in these complications. Prahlad Maharaj explains in the Srimad Bhagavat a simple formula of being happy in this world. Simply stop trying to be happy in this world, and then you'll be relieved of all sorrows. But it is impossible to simply stop trying to be happy in this world. The Brahma Sutra explains, anandamayobhyasat, that by the soul by nature is satchit ananda, and it is always seeking that ananda, that bliss, that ecstatic joy, which is its constitutional nature. But when we are misidentifying ourselves with this body, we are trying to find the ecstatic, unlimited joy of the soul through the interactions between the body and the sense objects. and we become frustrated. Therefore, Krishna says in Gita, Param drisvani varatate, that we can give up these pursuits for the temporary pleasures of worldly life by experiencing the higher place, the higher pleasure of spiritual joy, spiritual illumination. And that comes, according to Padma Purana, Sarvapadiva Nirmuktam, Tatparatvena Nirmalam, Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhaktar Uchyate. By engaging the same senses that are now causing us so much bondage in the service of the Lord of the senses, Rishikesh. Through this process, our senses, our mind becomes purified, and the pure, joyful light of the soul shines through our every aspect of life. This is the goal and purpose of spiritual life, to simply cleanse and purify our consciousness so that the true natural qualities of our spiritual nature are manifested within our life. Krishna is explaining that there are three natures. There is the superior spiritual nature, there is the inferior material nature, and there is the marginal nature. The Atma is this marginal nature or energy of the Lord, which is between the material and the spiritual. And we eternally have the independent freedom to either take shelter of the material nature or the spiritual nature. That is our choice. Krishna is explaining, Mahatmanastu mam parata daivim prakriti mashata vajantyananya manasov jatva bhutadim avyayam. That great personalities, Mahatmas, they surrender to the spiritual energy of the Lord. How? It is actually quite simple. By simply utilizing everything of this material creation in God's service, we spiritualize everything. What is the difference between material nature and spiritual nature? It is simply a difference of consciousness. If we understand how everything is part of God, Om Purnam Adha Purnam Idam Purnam Udachyate Purnasya Purnam Adaya Purnam Eva Vishishyate, that everything is coming from Krishna, everything is inseparable from Krishna, to utilize everything for its proper purpose as an expression of our love for God is to perceive the spirituality in everything. But as soon as we try to separate anything in our consciousness from Bhagavan, our consciousness becomes material. And therefore we perceive everything as being material. Is this microphone material or spiritual? If we are using it simply for some mundane glorification, or to sing some mundane love songs, then it is nothing but material energy. But the same microphone, when it is utilized in its eternal function, which is to glorify God, it becomes, we are aware of its pure, inherent, eternal, spiritual nature. Now we may say that this microphone is not eternal, because at one time, a few years ago, the company did not manufacture it, and in a few years, it will be spoiled like everything in this world, and it will be thrown away. But let us analyze the truth of what this microphone actually is consisted of. It is made out of material energy. And even the scientists claim that matter cannot be destroyed. It can only be transformed. This is scientifically discovered. This is what Krishna has been saying 5,000 years ago, and great rishis have been saying for millions of years. and they have just discovered this idea, that material energy is eternal. Because essentially material energy is spiritual energy. All the atomic particles within this, they are constantly transforming. But they never die. So the energy, the eternal energy of God that is temporarily composing this microphone will always be composing something, either manifest or unmanifest. And when that energy is connected to Krishna through devotion, through consciousness, we perceive its eternal spiritual quality. But due to ignorance, when we identify this energy with the illusion that I am this body, then we see everything in its temporary material condition rather than its eternal relationship with God. Therefore, this transformation of consciousness is the greatest necessity in human life. Just like we read in the Ramayana, Hanuman was such a great devotee of the Lord. He had such complete faith in Lord Ramchandra. He had such invincible enthusiasm to just utilize everything in Ramchandra's service that he just didn't consider anything except Ram. And therefore nothing was impossible for him. When it was time to jump across the Indian Ocean to Sri Lanka, he didn't even consider whether it was possible or not. He only considered one thing. Ram wants it done, it must be done. And he jumped. And when he was in Sri Lanka, you know the story, how he destroyed the Ashoka Grove of Ravana. After giving the ring of Sri Ram to Mother Sita, and satisfying her heart and pacifying her mind, he felt that I have done my job. But a good servant always wants to go beyond the call of duty. Let me destroy this grove, Ashok trees. And he just began, the most beautiful, precious part of Ravana's whole kingdom was this Ashoka garden. Can you imagine? His whole kingdom was made out of gold. Today, if we have a little gold ring, or wealthy people here in India, at the time of a wedding, they buy all kinds of gold for the bride, and she can hardly walk. There's so much gold on her. She's actually suffering, but people are saying, oh, very nice. Not actually very nice. Tremendous austerity. And then they have to get all kinds of guards and security to guard her from people killing her and stealing all her gold. And this is considered very nice. It's hot, and you're carrying all this burden all over you, and you're afraid somebody's going to steal it, and there's people protecting you. And this is considered joyful, happiness. Huh? And how much gold can cover your body? We spend crores of rupees just to cover one woman's body with gold. Ravana covered his entire city with gold. We cannot calculate the amount of wealth he had. But he was still miserable. Because whatever you have, you always want something else. Huh? He had conquered the heavenly planets, and he had stolen the most beautiful women, the apsaras, to be his own brides. They would dance for him. They would do anything for him. And he had such prestige, he literally conquered Indra. That's very prestigious for a warrior to conquer Indra. And so much wealth, so much fame, so much power. He had millions upon millions of servants that would do anything he said. Everything a materialist could possibly want in life, he had it all. But one thing he didn't have, peace of mind. He was miserable. He was always wondering, why is it I have a city made out of gold, I have fame, I have power, I have all kinds of beautiful women to enjoy, if I have everything my tongue wants to eat, they cook it for me at any time of the day. And he was still miserable. And when he heard about Sita, that's the reason. If only I had Sita, then I'll be happy. Krishna says in Gita that kama, or material desire, it is like fire. It blazes. The more you have, the bigger and hungrier the fire of the senses and mind becomes. And Ravana's own wife, Mandodari, she was so beautiful. And she was so faithful and chaste to this demon. She was everything a man could want. She was actually a great personality. Can you imagine living with Ravana? She did it. She kept telling him, just be satisfied with what you have. And Vibhishan and his other well-wishers were telling him, Ravana, just be satisfied with what you have. But he couldn't. It was not possible. The fact is, in this material world, without God consciousness, you cannot be satisfied with what you have. And even if temporarily you think you are satisfied with what you have, it's taken away, and then you don't have it. So what is the use of this material existence? Working harder and harder and harder and harder for some big empire, for some luxuries, for some comforts. Huh? Ravana had an entire city made out of gold, and his palace made the heavenly mansions look like where the squatters are living here in Bombay. This is to the degree, because he took everything from there. Still he was not satisfied. If only I had Sita, I will be happy. This is material consciousness. If only I had this one more thing, then I will be satisfied. And when you get it, then you have to protect it. Then you're afraid somebody else is going to have it because it's so valuable. And then people become envious of you because you have it. And then you develop enemies. And then you realize, I need something else. I need something else to maintain this. Huh? Just like the story of that one great sage. All he had to his name was one kopan. You know what is kopan? It's a loincloth. Just a little tattered piece of cloth. And he was sitting on the bank of the Ganges. Dhyan, meditation. And somebody came up to him and said, isn't it rather uncomfortable that after you take your bath in the Ganges, you're wearing the same loincloth and it's wet? I will give you another one. You will have a change. He said, oh, yes, actually, that's good sense. So he bathed in the Ganges, and he wringed it out, and he put it on the bank of the Ganges to dry, and then he would sit in meditation. But he heard this noise. Was a rat. Actually not a rat, it was a mouse. And this little mouse was eating his loincloth. And he'd push it away. One friend came to him. He said, you look like you're in anxiety. He said, I am in anxiety. I can't meditate anymore. Why? Because this mouse tries to eat my loincloth. That's not a big problem. Don't you know in this world there's always solutions to every problem? Huh? Really? What's the solution? You just get a cat. The cat will keep the mouse away. Huh? Yes, correct. You can get me cat? Yes, I can get you cat. He was sitting, meditation, and the mouse was not around. He was thinking, ah, you see, all my problems are solved. No more mouse.
Meow, 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 meow.
The cat. The cat started scratching him and climbing on him and, ah, what to do with this cat now? I can't meditate. So he went to his friend, the wise man. Now this meditation is being spoiled by this cat. He's crawling on me and meowing and everything. Of course, his friend said, because he's hungry. He wants milk. You have to give him milk. Well, where am I going to get milk? He said, from a cow. Don't you know where milk comes from? So what do I do? You get a cow. Get a cow. The cow feeds the cat the milk, and the cat keeps the mouse away, and then you can meditate. Huh. Why didn't I think of that? Sitting meditation. Why this cow is making so much noise? He goes to his friend. This cow is harassing my meditation. What do I do? Someone has to milk the cow. Well, who's going to milk the cow? He said, you need a wife. The wife will milk the cow. The cow will give the cat milk. The cat will keep the mouse away, and you'll be peaceful. Huh. Correct, correct. So he got a wife. Nice wife. She was very faithful. She was very much responsible. And every day she would milk the cow. And in this way he was very peaceful for some time. Then one day, you lazy bum, why don't you get a job? You expect me to milk this cow living on the bank of the river for the rest of my life? You should supply me a house. You should give me some nice saris, some nice jewelry. What do you think your in-laws are going to think about all this? Get a job. Do something with your life. And he got a job. And he had no time for meditation. He was just working, foaming at the mouth like an ass, just working all day. He got a nice house. Nice clothes for he and his wife. And one day he realized, I'm totally miserable. I have all these things. I have a house. I have a wife. I have a cow. I have a cat. The mouse doesn't come around anymore. But what's wrong with mice anyway? I know the problem. And then you know what he did? He left it all. He went back to the Ganges and he took his extra loincloth and threw it in the Ganges. Then he reeled. Then he could sit in meditation very nice. So this is a simple story, but it has a great message that the more you try to solve the problems on the material level, the more problems you have, the more complicated life becomes, and the more miserable you become. Simplicity is the basis by which we can have peace of mind. Simple living, high thinking. This is a society of simple thinking and high living. Ravana, he was the embodiment of the material aspirations that are in the hearts of every one of us. The fact is that Ravana is living in all of us. What was Ravana's consciousness? To enjoy Sita. Who was Sita? The goddess of fortune. Sita is the consort of Ram. But we can understand that goddess of fortune means all fortune in this world is the expansion of Sita. And to want to enjoy any of it for our own sense enjoyment is to take the position of Ravana. Sita's eternal purpose is to be engaged in the loving service of Ram. And Ravana wanted her in his service. Similarly, this entire nature, it is all the expansion of Sita. It is all fortune. She is the goddess of fortune. When we want, it is all meant for the service of Ram. When we want to take it for ourselves, we become Ravanas. And this Ravana within us is a very, very powerful demon. How to slay Ravana? Only through the grace and the power of Ram, who is divinely present within his name. When we attentively take shelter of the name of Ram, that name purifies us of all of these propensities of material enjoyment. So Ravana had this Ashoka grove, and in the entire golden city of Lanka, this was his favorite place. That's why he put Sita in the Ashoka grove. He was thinking, if anything, this place is so charming, it is so beautiful, it will melt her heart, she will see what kind of beauty and opulence I have, and she will want to surrender to me. This was his thinking. But of course, Sita remained very chaste. And Hanuman, you know these sadhus, that's the way they are. They'll get you right where it hurts. Huh? Hanuman knew the soft spot of Ravana, this Ashoka garden, of everything. He was so proud of it, he was so delighted with it, therefore I will destroy it. So he just started tearing down the trees and breaking down the palaces and destroying the temples, and Ravana started sending so many rakshasas, and ultimately Indrajit captured Hanumanji and put him on trial. Ravana wanted to kill him. Vibhishan said, no, he is the messenger of your enemy, you cannot kill him, it's against Kshatriya codes. So Ravana said, all right, I will humiliate him. Monkeys are proud of their tails. Light his tail on fire. This is a wonderful story. They lit Hanumanji's tail on fire. You know what happened at that time? Goddess Sita, she heard the news that they had just lit Hanuman's tail on fire. She prayed to the fire god, Agni, that make this fire not hot, but very refreshing and cooling for Hanuman to enjoy. Huh? So in this way, his tail was burning like anything, and he could understand by the blessings of goddess Sita, there was no pain. This is an example. When we have the blessings of the Lord, material energy becomes spiritualized. Is fire hot or cold? Materially, it's hot. But when the Lord intervenes, it doesn't necessarily have to be hot. Huh? Because he was engaged in the service of the Lord, because he was surrendering to the will of the Lord, Mother Sita took the most painful condition and made it pleasing for him. She transformed material energy into spiritual energy. How? What was meant to be his destruction and his pain and his misery ended up to be an instrument to help him serve Ram. He took that burning tail and he began to jump from one building to the next like a monkey. He broke the ropes and he started jumping. And every building he jumped upon, because of the fire that Ravana personally put on his tail, that fire was utilized in Ram's service. And he burned down the city of Lanka. Such a wonderful example of how a devotee is expert at utilizing everything in the service of the Lord. Even the most undesirable possible thing, he can use it in the service of the Lord. And in this way, free ourselves of all the bondage of material existence. This transformation of consciousness, of your learning how to utilize everything in God's service, is the ultimate goal of this human form of life. Krishna explains in Gita that for a materialist, Krishna comes as death. But for a devotee, death comes as Krishna. That is our choice. Death is the ultimate end of our life. It's the culmination of everything we live for. Do we want to see the beauty, the glory of Krishna at the time of death? Or do we want to see the destruction of everything we're attached to at the time of death? It's one or the other. To prepare our consciousness. This is what Krishna consciousness means, to simply be conscious of God. And how is it done? The process is being enacted amongst us right now. The first principle for spiritual elevation is sadhu sangha, associating with saintly people. And there are so many saintly people here today. What does it mean to be a saintly person? It means to have the desire to purify your heart, to put God first in your life, to hear the glories of the Lord in the association of devotees, is the first and most important principle for our spiritual purification. But it must be done regularly. Because in this world, there is so much manipulation and so much exploitation. I was just speaking to a young lady today. She was deciding whether she should become an actress. I told her, be very careful. Because I'm from America where I know all these types of people. And how people try to exploit you. The most famous, the most highly paid of all singers, musicians in America. In order to become famous, it's not a question of talent. It's a question of connections. Some of the most talented people are unheard of. But somehow or other, if you have some talent, or even if you don't have some talent, if you just have the right people pushing forward your cause, you can become famous. And whether you're talented or not, everyone will think you are because of propaganda. So this person, he was just a good singer, like so many tens and thousands of good singers just trying to make a living. And he was approached by the American Mafia. We'll make you a star in no time, but you become our property. He became the biggest, to this day, he's the biggest star. But he's miserable. He's constantly getting angry, constantly getting divorces, constantly getting in fist fights in bars. Huh? And he's totally a slave of these higher powers. He has millions upon millions of dollars. He has fame and fortune. But he's a slave of his senses. He's a slave of greedy men. And he's miserable. So what is the use? This is material nature. Therefore, to neutralize the effects of all people who are trying to exploit us and manipulate us in this world, we must keep the association of saintly people who are truly our well-wishers, who do not want anything of us or from us. They simply want to give us God's love. They simply want to share the innermost parts of their hearts with us. Tonight we are all sitting together to chant the holy names, to dance, to hear the glories of the Lord, to hear about the ultimate purpose of life, to hear about the true virtues that we should be striving for. How important this is, especially for our children. Can you understand what I'm saying? Yes? You can understand? Spiritual life is simple for the simple and complicated for the complicated. Because these little children, they're simple. They don't have big vocabulary, but they understand what we're saying. Yes, Hanuman was a great devotee, and Ravana was a demon. I want to be like Hanuman. That's all, right? One was using everything in God's service. One was using everything for their own greedy purposes. Do you want to be Ravana or Hanuman? Say it loudly. Hariro. They understand the goal of life. It's all simple. Sitting in the association of devotees, hearing the glories of the Lord, is the true satisfaction of the soul. Taking prasad together, we should do this regularly. It should be the first priority of our life. And then we should take that inspiration with us to our homes. And every day, we should sanctify our consciousness by chanting the name of God, by reading the Bhagavad, the Ramayana, the Bhagavad Gita, by living purely, and by learning how to spiritualize all of this world through consciously remembering God. The process of bhakti is the process by which we can spiritualize our bodies. We say that this body is a lump of ignorance, but as long as we're thinking we're this body, it is a lump of ignorance. But as we realize that we are the eternal soul living within this body, and this body is a vehicle to serve God, the body is no longer a lump of ignorance. The body is a divine instrument for God's glorification. It's pure. It's spiritual. As is everything in this creation. So this is our humble request. Try to very seriously understand the difference between spiritual life and material life. try to understand by remembering God and utilizing everything in God's service, we can become free, we can become liberated from all the clutches of suffering. Do not be duped. Do not be cheated by the propaganda of this world that the more you have, the happier you'll become. It is a lie. It is a lie that 99% of the population is falling for, and they're being cheated. At the end of their life, they simply have to look back and say, "What have I accomplished? What have I done? It's all gone." Put your treasure where real wealth is, in the development and the purification of our consciousness. This is where real satisfaction and peace can be found. Thank you very much.
For me, it's the first time asking. Maharaj, in the material life, spontaneously we do several things. I want to do my job. I have not to take anybody's permission. I want to work like a donkey. Or in my family affairs, I want to work. I have not to take anybody's instruction. But when it comes to spiritual life, no, it's so difficult to come, to attend program. And why is so?
You tell me.
Why is it so difficult to come to this program? Raise your hand if it was difficult to come to this program. The nature of a conditioned soul is to misuse his time. There is no more precious possession that we have than every moment that God is giving us to live. If you lose a moment, you cannot buy it back for all the wealth of the world. How we utilize our time, how we invest each moment of our life, is the most important consideration a man or woman should ask. This material society that we're living in, it is like what they say, a rat race. Do you know what rat race really means? In the West, they have these wheels, and a rat goes on the wheel, and he just runs, and he thinks he's going somewhere, but actually he's just making the wheel go round. Right? He's running, 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 and it's just the wheel going, and the faster he runs, the faster the wheel. But where does he go? He's in the same place. In this way, this society is like a rat race. Everybody's running, but nobody's getting anywhere. Therefore, the greatest tragedy, the Vishnu Purana explains, Sahanistan Mahachidram, this means the greatest misfortune, the greatest tragedy in all of creation is to waste a valuable moment without utilizing it for God consciousness. But we become so foolish. We become so caught up in everything else that we simply do not have time for spiritual life. Just like Srila Prabhupada, when he was in Montreal in 1968, he explained this. He said, we are asking them, chant, 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 and they are saying, can't, can't, can't. I don't have time. Unless we make time, we are cheating ourselves of the real gift of this human form of life. It should be our first priority. As parents, our first priority should be to show our children how interested we are in spiritual life. And what better way is there than this? What do you think, children? When your parents are here, does that help you want to love Krishna more than anything? See? The first duty we have to our children is to bring them to such wonderful events. It's the first duty to God within our heart. You know, just a few decades ago, right here in India, this was natural for everybody. Our Guru Maharaj used to tell us that when he was young, in every town, in every village, people would work hard during the day. They would come home, they would eat a little prasad, and everyone would gather together to have kirtan, to hear Ramayana, Mahabharata, Srimad Bhagavatam. The entire village would always come together every evening for this purpose, to chant the holy names together and to hear the narration from Ramayana or Bhagavatam. And when sadhus would come, the whole village would come together to hear them speak the Ramayana or the Bhagavatam or the Gita, and they would have kirtan. And then they would go home and they would dream about Krishna, naturally. This is the culture of Bharatvarsha. This is the culture that makes India great. People come from the West not to see ambassador motor cars or to see people living on the streets. They come because they know this is the highest spiritual place in the world. It has the deepest, greatest spiritual heritage. This is the fiber the remnants of this fiber is the only thing left that's keeping India cohesive. There was a Russian diplomat of the Communist Party who was an ardent atheist. He was living in Calcutta for 10 years. And when he was about to leave, he was being transferred back to Russia. His final comment, from the sincere bottom of his heart, he said, after being in this country of India and seeing how incredibly disorganized it is compared to anywhere else in the world, my conclusion is the only way this country can survive is there must be a God. He said, I have been convinced of the existence of God, and I have become God conscious just by living here and seeing all of this. There's no other way it can keep going unless there's a God. This was his realization. But actually, the culture of your forefathers is a culture of God-centered living. What we are doing tonight, this is what practically the entire population of India was doing every night of the year. They would work, they would live simple, they would work hard, they would come, they would bring their families, they would take prasad together, they would all come to an assembly hall or to a garden or to some place, and they would all meet, they would hear the shastra, they would hear Krishna katha, they would have kirtan, they would take prasad, they would go to sleep thinking of Krishna, They would wake up, they would take their bath, they would chant the name of Krishna, they'd have a nice kirtan with their family, they'd go to work. This is the culture of Bharatvarsha. But now, where has it gone? We don't have time. We work till 10, 11, 12 o'clock at night, trying more, more, more money. We don't have time for these things. Or we're so frustrated with our work, we go home, and what has replaced the satsang of the sadhus? The television? Huh? We go home and we turn on the television, and everyone in the family just sits like this. You watch television. Did you ever watch a person watching television? I've done it. They become like, people say that sadhus are brainwashing people. Talk about brainwashing. Here everyone's harivo, harivo. It's blissful, it's joyful. Television, you just become like a zombie. A zombie. You're just being programmed just to all your creativity, all of everything is just drained out into this television tube. And there's no interaction with anyone. Why families are so impersonal and falling to pieces? Because their form of entertainment is not to interact in a loving way, it's just to sit and everybody's individually just... You can't have a loving relationship with a glass tube. But tonight we see people are smiling with one another, they're laughing with one another, they're dancing with one another, they're singing God's names with one another. It's blissful, it's joyful, it brings unity and love amongst ourselves, and it purifies our heart and brings us closer to God. Or we go to some restaurant, some permit room, is that what you call them here? The joy of the soul is to come together to glorify God. This is real society. This is the society of Bharatvarsha. Why should we import the society of materialistic cultures where 75% of marriages become divorced within 3 years, where two-thirds of children are aborted within the womb, where there's terrible crime in the streets, everywhere. We're importing these things and we're finding the same results are coming. There is a great necessity to make time to associate with devotees and to spiritualize your lives. Traditionally, what we are doing tonight is an everyday affair. We don't have time. If you don't have time for Krishna, then Krishna will not have time for you. As we approach Krishna, he reciprocates accordingly. We have to establish our priorities, and we have to live by them. If you know the importance, you will make time. There's no question about it. Anyone who says, I don't have time to chant the name of God, I don't have time for satsang, is cheating himself and lying to himself. You will make time. Do you have time to eat every day? Because you understand its necessity. Do you have time to sleep every day? Because you understand its necessity. When you know something's necessary, you make the time. If you understand that your spiritual life is necessary, you will make the time. there any other questions?
In our movement, chanting is considered to be the most important thing. So, how should we go about chanting, and what is the importance of chanting in our daily life?
The chanting of the holy name is declared in the Shastra to be the Yuga Dharma. Kalera dosha nide rajan asti heka mahanguna kirtanad eva krishnasya mukta sangha param vrajay. This age called Kali Yuga is an ocean of faults. Manda sumanda matayo. It is explained that people in this age have very little inclination towards spirituality. They're very attached to material life and sense objects. They're very lazy spiritually. Very aggressive for other things, but lazy spiritually. Therefore, in this age, there's one benediction that anyone, simply by chanting God's name, can attain the supreme perfection of life. The perfection of liberation. And how to chant? Like these children? We should chant like a child, crying out for our mother. When a baby cries for its mother, the baby is in fixed attention, trying to get the attention of the mother. When a baby is chanting, a baby is trying to create a sense of urgency, that mother, it's urgent, I need you now. It can't wait. This is how our consciousness should be when we call out the names of Krishna. Like a baby crying for its mother. No other shelter. No other dependence on anyone else except my mother. Only she could save me. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. We should chant with great attention. Concentration and with feeling. And we should chant regularly, like medicine, not just whimsically whenever we feel like it. We should have a time of the day specifically set aside where I just sit and do nothing but chant the holy name of God. And then throughout the day, any time we could call out the name of God. But one time should be exclusively for only that. And we should chant with great concentration, attentiveness, feeling. We are crying out for the help of God. I could see that many of you are now crying out for the help of God in the form of prasad. I'm taking such a long time with all my long words that your stomachs are like little babies crying out for Krishna in the form of prasad. So I'd like to thank you all very kindly for sharing your wonderful, valuable time with us and making this beautiful evening possible. Hare Krishna.